Hello everyone, and welcome to Now You're Playing With Power, a Nintendo podcast. We are sitting here on a fine Easter Sunday, and I hope you got some chocolate ready, Bally, because we're going to be munching through some topics of Nintendo goodness today. So we're going to get into that. But yes, before we do that, let's say hi to Bally himself. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm good. Having a chilled Easter. It's very rainy here in London, but hopefully it's nicer where you are.
Yeah, exactly. Wherever you may be listening to this, I always like the idea that someone is on the bus listening to us in their ears, or, you know, walking down the street.
Just on the other side of the planet.
Right, that's crazy. Yeah. That's awesome. I really like to think about that. But anyway, we have a show to get to, and as per usual, we will be kicking it off with what we've been playing. We also have a listener mail segment coming up after that, and we shall finish with some very delayed reactions to the Smash Brothers Direct that took place a couple of weeks ago. Of course, because of our scheduling, we weren't able to really address it properly, so we're going to do that and hopefully give our opinions on the matter. So before we do any of that, however, yes, we shall kick it off with what we've been playing. So, Bally, take it away. What have you been getting at this week?
Well, I've been piling the hours into this game for the past couple of weeks, and I actually completed the campaign, and that game that I'm talking about is Advance Wars on the Wii U downloadable, what do you call
virtual
it?
Virtual
console. So I've been playing the virtual console version of Advance Wars, and I absolutely love it. I mean, I was a big fan of the game when it came out, but that was way back in 2002 in Europe. And
right.
As a motorbike goes past my window. So 10 years ago, I was a completely different gamer. I mean, I barely ever completed games. This time round, I just sat down and I'd just play for hours on end each mission and actually completed the game. And I must say that the final few missions of the campaign are pretty insane.
Have you ever completed this game before? Is this the first time you've actually gone through it?
No, this is the first time I've completed it. I got stuck on the campaign when I was younger. And then other than that, I just did lots of the missions, not missions. There's like separate skirmish things you can do in the war room where you can
kind of like side questy things.
They're not. Yeah, they're just a different game mode, basically. And that's a real area where this game is very different to something like Fire Emblem, who's obviously
sure.
The same developer, publisher.
Right.
Developer,
right.
Publisher.
And I mean, like, is there a fleshed-out story to Advance Wars, or is it very much gameplay-concentrated?
I've heard that the other three games have a bit of a better story than the first one. The first one's very much, oh, you attacked me. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. I'm going to attack you now. And then it's just sort of this curiosity as to who's attacking who. It's all a bit weird. And this,
right.
the world itself is very weird. It's just these CEOs, commanding officers, who it's like war is like their hobby almost, or something weird.
Right. They treat it as if it's like a fun activity as opposed to this brutal, grueling.
It's like this anime fun thing that they get up to, and they are just so detached from the units, it's ridiculous. I think there's about 6, 7, 8 CEOs in the game, and they all have great personalities and they really interact well in the story, and to that extent it is quite a cool story. But yeah, it's just mad. It's very Japanese when you think about it.
I mean, that really does kind of fit into the style. It's very cartoony. It's you know, very appealing to, you know, a younger audience in terms of like the look, not
yeah.
necessarily the gameplay. And I find the curious contrast there, because, you know, this is like more of a hardcore war setting, and yet the units are completely disposable and faceless, and, you know, they are like just, you know, people on the front lines, comparative to Fire Emblem, where, you know, every unit matters and deaths are significant and characters each have their own dialogue and everything.
Yeah.
So, funny that, you know, this is the one which is set in a more realistic supposed setting, and yet, you know, less care given.
Yeah, it's very weird, because you can really tell from, even if you take all the gameplay elements away, you can still really tell that these are like developed by the same people. But it's the way that in Fire Emblem the characters are interacting during the battle, And sure. Whereas in this, it's all kind of a little bit of story just slapped in at the start and then a bit at the end. And I don't know. It works for what it is. It's just a completely different experience, I'd say.
Yeah. And this is a game that you've completed very quickly, and you've put a lot of time into it. Like, you've put many more hours than you put into Zelda into this game, even though you completed them both within a similar time period. Is that just to do with the type of game that it is? I mean, I know I had a very similar experience when Fire Emblem Awakening came out, and I put 50 hours into it in a single week. Do you think it's just because it's that sort of experience?
Yeah, it's one of those games, just like Fire Emblem, where certainly the final mission must have taken me like 3-4 hours in total, and that's because you can be going along for about an hour and then you realize that you're losing really badly to the point of no return, sort of thing. So an hour into attempting the mission, you decide, right, I have to restart the mission. And that's just life. And that happens in Fire Emblem as well, obviously.
Sure.
But that's why I think it took so long, is that there were a number of campaign missions, especially the Fog of War stuff, which is really tricky. It's just really difficult at times.
Yeah.
And it is...
Do you not feel very frustrated when you say you get an hour into a thing and you have to restart again?
It is frustrating, but I'd rather that happened than the game was too easy and I just sailed through it personally. And also, I should say that now that I've completed it, there's what's called the War Shop or something, where you can basically use your coins that you get to unlock COs and new maps on the War Room. And you can also unlock, which I did buy, a whole separate campaign, which is hard mode. So I guess I'm assuming it's the same missions, but just hard. And I think I might play through that in the next while. But yeah,
right. To the point of it being frustrating, I know you've had similar experiences with Fire Emblem, where you bang your head against a wall on a mission again and again, but you don't seem to want to go back to Fire Emblem. Is there a fundamental part of the difficulty you have with that game comparative to this? Do you think it's an easier game to play, Advance Wars?
Yeah, because Advance Wars, I feel like I know and the game helps in doing this, but the game informs you of exactly what each unit does. I think this game, I should mention that this game has an entire tutorial campaign. Like, it has 17 missions that gradually teach you one more unit after the other. You have to complete that entire mini campaign before you're even allowed to start the main campaign. So you're going into the first mission of the main campaign knowing every unit down to the T. Like, you know exactly what's weak against them, what they're good against. And I feel like Fire Emblem never did that for me with Sacred Stones.
Right, and actually this is very funny, because now that I'm thinking about it, Intelligent Systems brought both of these games over to the West, and they were the first in their series in the West. Exactly the same thing in the first Fire Emblem game that came to the US and Europe was the initial campaign with Lin was a full-blown tutorial. It was 11 chapters long, and I believe the entirety of the way through, it instructed you on each new class that you got and the weapon triangle and all of that stuff. It basically held your hand. So unfortunately, Sacred Stones didn't quite have that because they'd already done it, I suppose. So But there is that exists, so maybe, you know, it would have been better for you to play that game first, but unfortunately, only Sacred Stones was available on the Ambassador program.
Yeah, so maybe you've just highlighted the biggest issue there, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
But for me, yeah, Fire Emblem is very... I don't know enough about each unit and all the enemies as well. I think that because in Advance Wars, your enemies are using the same units you are, you know the enemy better, and sure. With Fire Emblem, it feels like there's brand new enemies in lots of missions, and you don't realize what one wrong move in Fire Emblem and you're dead, and that's just really irritating. Whereas it takes a good few moves to realize you need to restart the mission in Advance Wars.
Fair enough.
But overall, it's like I said, I really like this game. I really, really, really hope that it comes to the 3DS.
Sure.
And on top of that, I'm really keen to download Advance Wars 2 when it hopefully comes out on the Wii U.
Right. And I mean, in Japan, on the Japanese Virtual Console, they release them both as a double pack together, which seems like a much better deal, to be honest.
Yeah, that would have been really nice. But
I'm sure they're just going to stagger that release and eventually put that out on this console.
But I mean, I'm happy to spend another £6 on the game. Like, £6 for 20-odd hours of gameplay, in my opinion, is a bargain. So.
Yeah, that's a huge bargain.
I've had a really great time with it. I think that... I'd also really like to see, I should say, the DS versions come to the Wii U. Has it been confirmed by Nintendo that DS games will come to the Wii U?
Yes, they have said that is something that's happening. But again, they announced GBA games coming to the Wii U a year ago. So the fact that they've just said it doesn't mean it's going to be happening overnight. This will take time to implement, no doubt. So we'll be waiting, but I'm sure Nintendo will get there eventually.
Fair enough, yeah.
So I know that they've done some interesting stuff with this game and all the games, the GBA games on the Virtual Console, where they've added a few new options. Do you want to talk through what they've done, you know, with the graphics, how there's a smooth and, like, pixelated option and what that does?
Yeah, so like you said, there's a smooth and pixelated option. The pixelated option is the original pixels. So what the original was is exactly the same as what you see, which makes it look very... gritty and grainy and pixelated ultimately on the large screen, whereas there's also the smooth option, which to my knowledge just basically fills in pixels and makes the game look nicer in general. So I've been playing with the smooth option.
And have you been mainly playing it on the TV or on gamepad or a mix of both?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was home in Edinburgh for about 10 days playing a lot of this, and I'd be playing with my Wii U Pro Controller on the big screen, which was really nice. And then occasionally my dad would walk in and be like, oh, I want to watch the news or something. So I'd just be like, okay. And then I'd just go back onto the gamepad, which is...
That's really good, yeah.
And it looks great on both, in my opinion. There's something really cool about playing Game Boy Advance games on the Wii U gamepad, because it's like a quadruple XL Game Boy Advance.
Right, it is, yeah.
Pretty cool. It looks really good. Obviously, the Wii U gamepad's battery life is a bit irritating, but...
It is, yeah,
I think that's something you just got to get used to, regardless of this game.
Do you think the original resolution works okay on the gamepad, or have you just kept the smoothing on the entire time?
I kept the smoothing on the entire time, because even the gamepad is miles bigger than a Game Boy Advance screen.
Right. So it still doesn't scale that well, I guess.
It still doesn't look amazing when they're on the pixelated version, but on the smooth version, like I said, it looks really nice.
Okay, great. Well, good. I'm glad you really enjoyed that and got a huge amount of value from it. Squeezed it right out, as one might say. So I'm going to pick back up with a game that I talked about in our very first episode of this show. And that is...
24 weeks ago.
Wow, that's nuts, isn't it? Yeah. Holy crap! So this game is the third in the original Phoenix Wright trilogy. So I'd played the first two. I played the first one, which I bought in America in maybe 2007, which is when I was there. Because I remember I bought that for myself. I bought Cooking Mama for you. And for our good friend Ali T, I bought him Trauma Center. So it was this thing where these three games on DS that were kind of doing strange and weird things and going down, like, interesting career paths that maybe we would also follow. So that was curious, and it was fun. So, yeah, it was my first taste of Phoenix Wright, and I really enjoyed it. I think the first game is one of those kind of standout moments where I realized, like, wow, this kind of visual novel-esque style of game is actually really interesting, and I really enjoyed it. The thing is, I can't take too much of it at once, which is why it's taken me 24 weeks to get through this game. It's not like I've been playing it consistently, but...
What makes it like that? Why is it not overly addictive?
Well... I mean, the thing is, the cases take a long time. Each case takes place over a period of I guess, usually about 2 or 3 days in terms of in-game time. But what that means is you're going between investigation and courtroom multiple times, so you're going back and forth. And once you start doing one segment, it starts to get a little bit monotonous, depending on what the case is like and how interesting it is. And the unfortunate thing is that I think Phoenix Wright games get a bit flabby in the middle. You know, they start off really great with a pretty quick case that gets you into the action. But once you get to maybe the end of the second case, the third case, that's where it starts to bog you down a bit, because these are really long trials you're going through, and unwrapping the mystery takes a long time, which means that you're going through days where you're not really finding out a huge amount, and especially like in the first day in court, most of the time the witnesses that you're cross-examining are not giving you a huge amount of information, and they're very obviously lying, and it just, you know, it kind of kills the momentum quite a bit. So the good thing about Trials and Tribulations is that it does a lot more to bring the 5 cases that you do in the game together through just various means of the story, how it all interlinks. And what I will say is that the final case of that game is utterly mind-boggling, because that case ties together not only this game, but the entire series. It takes characters from all across the games. Every single character that is significant to the series pops up in this final trial.
Oh, wow.
And it's just a whirlwind. It's crazy. So,
and are there characters suitably crazy in Japanese? And
they are so over the top. It is unbelievable. Like, I got used to it at this point, so I'm not really fazed by it. But for your average person playing a video game, coming across Phoenix Wright, they would think that you were crazy for playing such a thing, because it's just ridiculous. I mean, especially some of the ways that you solve the murders, where there are these things which are like, oh yes, this clearly happened. And you're thinking about, like, in real life, no one would ever do that. Like, it is some of these ridiculous concepts that are brought up. So it is definitely pushing the Japanese angle to a large extent. And it was interesting, because I actually watched the Phoenix Wright movie. I'm not sure if you know, there's a Phoenix Wright movie. It's a live action movie. This isn't an animated thing. Yeah, right. It's a live action movie based on the events of the first game, and it's in Japanese. It hasn't been translated, but I found it on YouTube, and it was a subtitled version. And it's really good. I like, it is crazy and just so stupidly Japanese, but the way that it sticks so rigidly to the story of the first game and is, I don't know, it's so faithful to it. It's kind of crazy. It's probably, if I were to say, my favorite video game movie. There's not a huge amount of things vying for that title, to be honest, because, you know, most video game movies are utter shite. But but it's really great. And I mean, the thing is really that if you haven't played the first game, or if you have no familiarity with Phoenix Wright in general, then I don't think you'll get a lot out of it, because you won't understand the characters and you won't know the backstory. You know, there was some stuff that they left out, so I had the knowledge to kind of fill that in myself. So there are some logic leaps and things which you may be a bit fazed by, but it's definitely worth a watch. And to anyone out there who hasn't seen it and is familiar with the Phoenix Wright games, it's on YouTube. I can't remember what it's called, but I highly recommend you go out and give it a shot, because it's a lot of fun. And yeah, it's a bit crazy. So,
do you think if I just tried maybe the first game, you think it's something I could get into? Is it unlike anything you've ever played?
So I would say it would be interesting for you to give it a go. I'm not sure how much you would gel to it, and if you would really like it that much, because it is not really a game in the traditional sense. You know, it's not like some kind of action adventure where you're killing guys or jumping on things. It's a story-based game, right? It's the story comes first and mechanics follow, which to some degree I shouldn't really like, because I'm a very mechanic-focused gamer. Like, I like games that have good gameplay over story. I think that definitely comes first for me. But when the game is basically 95% story, then you can't really look at that as a complaint, to be honest. I definitely, like, I could lend you the first game and you could give it a bash, and that would be a lot of fun, because we could then have kind of common knowledge on it, and we'd be able to discuss it a bit further.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
But yeah, it is a long game, so I think that if you were to tackle it, it would not be a while until you completed it, to be honest. So that might be a little bit of a thing. But yeah, no, I definitely think that as a very kind of different thing, it's good to branch out. And if you've never played a game like this, you know, I've been trying to branch out lately and play genres that I don't really usually like or appreciate. So, for example, you know, getting Titanfall and getting into that, because I'm not a first person.
Yeah, that has blown my mind.
Right, I'm not a first person shooter guy, and you know, I want to broaden my horizons in terms of the genres I play and all that good stuff. And you know, taking the advice of Patrick Klepek over at Giant Bomb, who so often does that and always, you know, challenges his expectations in gaming and all that good stuff. So, yeah, I definitely recommend
it. Yeah, I definitely admit that I'm a bit guilty to kind of sometimes just playing the stuff that I played and liked before. And I think trying out something like this would be quite nice.
Yeah, and I mean, that's something that a lot of people do. I mean, you're obviously going to fall into your comfort food, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I play Metroid Fusion every year, and I could be using that time to play other games, but I love that game, and I just fall back into it.
It doesn't take you that long anyway, does it? So, yeah.
No, sure it doesn't, but, you know, I could, if I'm going to play a game, I could spend time doing something else. And but, yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing, and yeah, people should broaden their horizons. But overall, I think that Trials and Tribulations is fantastic. It's close, I think, very close to the first game in terms of preference for my favorite of the series of the original trilogy. Most people shun the second one because, in all honesty, there isn't, like, the final case is great, but in terms of the grand narrative, it doesn't do a lot, whereas the first game has an overarching plot. Like, this is what I really like about it, is because it focuses on different cases, but at the end it ties them all together. And Trials and Tribulations is the granddaddy of that, because at the end it not only ties together its own game but the entire series, and just puts a neat little bow on top. It's pretty fantastic. And and you actually get to play as different characters. It's a sort of minor spoiler there. It's not like the gameplay changes significantly, but it's interesting because there's a very significant character throughout the entire series who you finally get to play as in this game, and it's an interesting thing. So I'm glad to have done it, and now I can move on to the next game I'll be playing, which is extremely similar. Is in fact Professor Layton versus Phoenix Wright. And that has just come out in Europe. It's not yet out in America. I'm not sure they even have a release date, and many people are angry about that. Many of our listeners are angry about that, I'm sure. Yes, I have that, and I'm going to be playing that. And I've put about an hour into it so far. Not a lot, but all I can say is that the production values are a goddamn step up. Holy shit. It is night and day, the difference between the DS games and the 3DS versions. You know, full polygonal models, there's animated cutscenes, full-on voice acting. It's impressive. It's really impressive so far, and I'm super excited to dive into that, because I'm a much bigger fan of Phoenix Wright in general, but I like the Layton series. I've played a few of the Layton games, you know, I like that there's going to be a balance here between the two, so I'm not just going Phoenix Wright straight into another full Phoenix Wright. There's going to be a bit of you know, a break between that. So that's great. I guess look forward to my more detailed impressions once I've gone through that. Although, from what I've heard, it's like a 20-hour game, so this may take me a little while to get through. I don't know about it. I'll see how it goes. So, yep, I'll be playing a lot of that in the coming weeks. Until then, I guess we are going to move straight on. So let us go to the next segment, which shall be our listener emails, and we'll see you there. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. are back for our second segment. Hopefully we are more awake now and ready and raring to go to answer some of your listener mail. So, Bally, why don't you kick it off with the first one?
So the first one is from Brandon, and he says, "Hey MBZ and Bally, I just recently finished Yoshi's New Island, and it was quite nearly the exact same game as the original Yoshi's Island, down to the level in which new enemies and mechanics are introduced. It seems that now in Nintendo games, if the word new is in the title, there will be very little actual new elements to the game. How do you feel about the expansion of this trend into franchises other than the Mario series, and are you worried that this trend will continue? Thanks for your time."
Well, a very interesting question, to be sure. This is an issue that I kind of addressed maybe a couple of years back. I wrote a blog post on IGN about how the new Super Mario Bros. Series did not in any way deserve such a moniker of being new and super, because those games were just, you know, repetitive and kept repeating ideas and weren't doing anything fresh. And it does seem, interestingly, that with Yoshi's New Island, from what people say, like, they aren't really panning the game so much as they're saying it's meh, you know, and that's not a good thing. Attributing meh to anything is very negative, and it just makes you feel that they're just going through the motions, really. It's just they're not injecting any innovation. They're just like, oh, here's a new game, it's basically the same thing. And yeah, it's a bit of a problem. Bally, what do you think about it?
At the same time, I mean, I'm not the world's biggest Yoshi's Island fan, but imagine I were. Right. I'd be quite keen for them to release this new Yoshi's Island. And I think it's important to emphasize how the new Mario series just got it so wrong. Just by the simple number, the fact that there were four. I think had there been two or even three spaced out at the right times, I think it could have. I don't think we would even be having this conversation. Do you know what I mean? I think that.
I don't know. I mean, see, I started getting fatigue having only played the first game, and the problem I really had was that the Wii game was really so similar, and I wasn't attracted to it in any way. Like, that's why I never bought it. I never picked it up because it was never interesting enough for me. And then we got to the point where they announced New Super Mario Bros. 2 on 3DS. And I still bought it because I'm a fucking moron. But that game just didn't do anything different from the past two. So even when we got to the third game, which was released a good maybe 3 or 4 years after the one on Wii, there was still that problem. So I'm not sure that that's something that I would attribute to it, honestly, in terms of, you know.
I say that because for me personally, I bought the very first one on DS, and right. Then I bought the most recent one on Wii U, mm-hmm. and they were so far apart that I was like, you know what, that's great, let's have some more Mario, whatever.
Right.
And I've not played tons and tons of 2D Marios in the past.
Yes.
So I'm not enjoying it to the degree where it's the best game ever, and obviously I've still not completed it, which does
exactly.
Does show that it's not an amazingly good game.
And that was the point that I was going to pick up. You've had this game since you first got your Wii U, and yet there have been many other games that came out after that, and you have completed and much quicker, and have gone back to them and been playing them much more. I think that does speak to very clearly the quality of that experience, and it is pretty high, but it just isn't hitting the mark where you are being drawn back to it. So,
yeah,
I mean, I think that is definitely an issue there.
So yeah, I guess I'd have to agree then that it is a worrying trend. You've persuaded me. But
and do you think that, like, where else would they push this trend towards? So far, it's just been platformers. It's been very kind of mainstream platformers. Yoshi and Mario are very, you know, popular characters, and I'm not sure if they would expand that to anything else.
I think a lot of these arguments were made for Pikmin 3. I mean, you have to look beyond just the graphical upheaval that there was between 2 and 3. But these weren't my... I don't have criticisms for Pikmin 3.
But this is what you've heard from other people,
I've read and heard things that oh, it's not, there's not enough new types of Pikmin, there's not enough new enemies, there's not enough new modes. I think a big criticism was that the you don't there's the Wii U gamepad isn't overly
utilized.
overly utilized in a creative way. I mean, it's very important because it's your map and stuff, but
Yeah.
not enough was done to be like, hey, look, this is Pikmin 3 on Wii U. It's Wii U because you do this funky thing with the pad, and there wasn't that.
Right, and I mean, I think a lot of people are trying to justify, especially at that point in the console's life, that there still hadn't been anything that really uses the gamepad, apart from Nintendo Land, in a truly interesting and innovative way.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of those criticisms were leveled because of the time period in which it came out and the fact that it was like the first tentpole release for the system. But yeah, no, I think that that's totally something that people are worried about.
We digress, and the ultimate fact is that while those four new Mario games were progressively dead and boring and repeating the same ideas, I think all four of them did sell pretty well.
Yeah.
Especially the Wii and DS, I think.
I mean, those games are on fire. It is insane. And I mean, that speaks a lot to the install base, the fact that those consoles were both astronomical successes, and they hit on a lot of nostalgia for people who had been out of video games for a long time, picked up DSs and Wiis, and were like, hey, I remember I played Mario when I was younger, let's get on that train. And obviously, they're bringing in a new crowd, ushering in younger people playing games as well. And Mario is very accessible, especially 2D Mario, for that audience. So it makes a lot of sense that those games sold extremely well. But I think the real problem, and what it stems down to, is Nintendo. We talked about this again and again, is their lack of wanting to take risks, and their crutching on these old franchises and not doing anything interesting with them, just continuing to tread them out, thinking that the same success is going to happen. They look at the success of the Wii game and the DS game and think, hey, we have these two new platforms, let's make games in those same styles for those consoles. And they don't do as well. And, you know, that's partially because those consoles haven't been as successful as the ones that came before them, but also because those games are just uninspired. So it does kind of lead into that issue once again, and it's unfortunate. I'll tell you what, the one thing that I never want to see is them release new Super Metroid, because if that happens and the game is terrible, I think I will have to go and cry in a corner and bemoan the existence of the Metroid series. So there you go.
I can see it happening to Metroid though. I mean, before New Super Mario Brothers on the DS, I think it was something like an 8 year gap since the last original 2D
Mario
Mario
game.
game, which
I think
was
it may have been longer than that, actually.
I think it was World, right?
No, because Yoshi's Island, I'm not
Oh,
sure if you would
Yoshi.
count that. But
Well,
maybe,
yeah.
yeah, maybe it was, if you're talking pure original Mario, then yeah, three, then
So
the
yeah,
original world on Super Nintendo.
so we're kind of in that big break, as it were, for Metroid. So that's why I said. But anyway.
Definitely. Well, I mean, just a quick side note on Metroid. You know, don't want to get too far off topic, but there was an interview recently with Sakamoto, who is the director of the Metroid series and who made Super Metroid, and you know, worked on Fusion and all those games, and most infamously Other M. Said because he's actually the director of Tomodachi Life, which is the new game that's
All
coming
right,
out
yeah.
soon, and he said that it would be unlikely for him to go back to the Metroid series, which is interesting to say the least, and kind of calls into question what's going to happen with that franchise. I'm not quite sure, you know, with the director thinking that maybe he's not going to go back to it. I really don't know. Are they going to give it back to Retro again, or what's going to happen with it? But I guess we'll see, and hopefully it's positive. But there you go. That's a bit of current topical stuff that's going around. And yeah, thanks for the question, Brandon. That was great. So.
Cool. So now we've got a question from Dudbun, and he says, hello, MBZ and Bally. I've been a long-time viewer of this series. Well, I've only had 11 episodes, but okay.
Yeah.
And also a long-time sub of MBZ. There we go. But anyway, I've decided I'm going to start sending messages a bit more often now, since I have a few questions for you that I'll spread over the future episodes. I'll start with this one, which is mainly aimed at MBZ, but if Bally has any experience, he can chip in as well. Have you done a classic mode lunatic slash lunatic and no deaths play through of Fire Emblem Awakening? And if so, how difficult did you find it, and how many times did you rage? Also, do you have any tips for how to make it any easier? Thanks for taking the time to read this.
Well, Fire Emblem Awakening seems to be a topic that lots of people are interested in, especially because I'm a big fan of the franchise. So no is the simple answer. I've only played through Fire Emblem Awakening once, and it resulted in me basically hibernating in my room for a week and and going through the game. I actually played it on... I can't remember. The mode where you can't lose characters, which seems like being a massive pussy and taking the easy way out, but I've played many Fire Emblem games in the past. I've proven my worth. I know I can get through them without losing people, and I just wanted a more relaxed time with the game, to be perfectly honest. So I played on...
I'd love that mode.
Yeah, I played on the more casual mode. I think it maybe is called casual mode, and I played through just on normal because I just wanted to enjoy the game, enjoy the experience, and not suffer horribly. And so, no, I've never done a classic Lunatic or Lunatic Plus run through, and maybe I will in the future just to see what it's like. But to be perfectly honest, I don't play games to get annoyed and frustrated. I play them to enjoy myself and have fun. So that prospect doesn't seem too enticing to me, to be perfectly honest. But I am going to be doing a run through of that game on my channel, and you know, I'll probably take the chicken weight out on there. I'll probably do it on classic for my channel, but I'm not going to do anything above normal, most likely. So there you go. I don't have any tips or anything because I haven't played that high level of play, so I hope you enjoy it if you want to go through it, but definitely not my thing. And that's that. So thanks for the question, but I guess that's that.
So now we've got a bit of a story from Daniel Bunzelmeyer, who says, "Hello, MVZ and Bally. Awesome podcast. I'm sitting here listening to the launch stories you guys had and loving them." So this was obviously our episode from a month ago. My own personal launch story. I lived in South Illinois, USA, and went to a small private high school with only a handful of people. My best friend and I were paying close attention to the Revolution and Wii leading up to launch. His parents didn't/couldn't get him one at launch, so I was to be the only one in my high school to get a Wii. And we were both freaking out with excitement. I know that feeling.
Sounds exactly like us.
You were right. Everyone made fun of it in high school, and it was at a time when graphics versus gameplay was running high in discussions. Back to the story. I was counting down the days until Christmas. Of course, I had to wait until Christmas if I didn't want to pay for it myself. Christmas arrived. I was 16 at the time, and my aunt informed me and my brother that there weren't any Wiis in the region, and she was sorry she couldn't get one. I, of course, didn't believe her, but played along. I went through Christmas Eve at her house, waiting for the big reveal. Nothing came. We went to Christmas Eve service, and I was expecting it to be at the house later on. Nothing. I got up Christmas morning. Nothing again. Went to Christmas on the other side of my family. Hopes dashed at this point. Then I opened one of my presents, and what is inside but the Wii version of The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess. Hopes renewed, I couldn't wait to get home. Not only was there not a Wii, there wouldn't be one for quite a while. And I would sit there and stare at my unusable Twilight Princess constantly thereafter. My aunt looked all over to find one. I carried enough cash on me to buy a Wii at the drop of a hat if I were to ever find one. I checked Walmart, Best Buy, GameStop, every store that could possibly get one every day trying to find one. 2 months later, my aunt finally gets one. February 16th was the day I went to get it, which made it about 3 months after launch that we were able to find one. The longest 3 months of my lifetime. But it was so cool, and every party I was ever invited to, I was asked to bring it with me. Probably got invited to several simply because I had it. The box is completely worn out from me packing it with me so much. It was such a cool system. I've actually since lost my Wii Sports game and recently acquired Super Mario Galaxy, and I'm currently playing through it. Completely, and then this is completely separate. He agrees with us on Brawl. It was the first one he owned, and he loved it better than Melee because it had more meaning for him, just like what we were saying before. Love your guys' podcast and would love to see more. 2 weeks is way too long to wait. Also, MBZ, don't quit making videos. Had to get that in there.
Okay, Well, that was a fantastic story. We really enjoyed reading that and hearing about your end of it because,
I like the idea of walking around with enough cash to just
Yeah.
buy a Wii wherever you see one. That's great.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that was I mean, it was such a frantic time because you just couldn't find them. I remember my cousins wanted to get a system and they had to wait forever for my uncle and aunt to eventually get them one, and they found it. And like, I believe there was a story where one was being delivered in a truck to the store. So my uncle went to the store. They didn't have them, and he walked out the store and saw the truck that was delivering a new shipment. So he waited until they were like taken into the store and went back in again and got them because they'd just come in. So yeah, it was a nuts time, and I'm sure many people have stories just like that. And I could not imagine. I would have thrown a massive hissy fit if that had been my si 3 months. I couldn't have waited. That would have been far too long. I would have just been in a horrible place.
Owning Twilight Princess as well and not
Yeah,
having the system to play
that's
it.
I pity you, but also it made a great story. So thanks for sharing that with us, and that's great that you eventually got it and enjoyed the system. So awesome. I don't think you have much to say. Anything else on that, Bally, or should we move
I
swiftly
think
on?
we shall move on. So
Excellent.
we got an email from Kurt. He says, "I remember reading this article sometime last year, and it's about two tribes trying to get Nintendo and Valve to allow Wii U users of one of their games to log into Steam Workshop for cross-platform functionality. Nintendo and Valve responded very positively to the request, but since the game had already been released, it was too late to actually implement the feature. But they remain open to consideration for a similar implementation in future games." This got me thinking, if Nintendo and Valve are open to working together, where could a working relationship like that end up? Mario and Luigi hats in TF2? Wii U the orange box port? Valve working with Nintendo on their online framework? Who knows? So my question is, what are your guys' thoughts on a possible Nintendo Valve partnership? Would you like to see it happen? If so, on what scale would you like to see the partnership? And just for funsies, what other third parties that Nintendo have never collaborated with before would you like to see Nintendo work with, and work on what? I personally would love a Valve Nintendo game being an FPS with actual colors. TF2's cartoony atmosphere kind of seems to me to be as close to a Nintendo FPS as we're going to get, if you don't count Steel Dive or Subwars, which is awesome, by the way. In my opinion, Nintendo and Valve seem to be a great match that just hasn't happened yet. Such an injustice, Kurt."
Excellent. Well, a very interesting email and one that we can dig into. The precedent to be set for Valve working with the console companies is already something that's on the table, mainly because they worked with Sony on the PS3 to implement a system whereby you could play Portal 2 cross-platform. So you could be someone on the PS3 could be playing Portal 2 with someone else who was playing on PC, and they got around that by basically making the player have to create a Steam account on Portal 2 and then log into Steam through that system. And funnily enough, that's how I got my Steam account. Was I got a PS3, and one of the first games I bought for it was Portal 2, and as a result, I ended up making a Steam account, which is PSN underscore Lord NBZ, because I would have preferred my Steam account to be Lord NBZ, but because I went through Sony, it had the PSN underscore in front of it, which is kind of stupid, but that's how it goes. And I guess that's a really cool thing. Like, there was something that I wanted to do a while back. I wanted to do a playthrough of Portal 2 with someone else who was going to be playing on PC. And it's funny that that was able to actually happen, because it seems crazy. Like, as much as in this modern era you think things like that are easy to do, companies don't really do it, and they don't really have that ability, which is crazy. Like, if you're playing Call of Duty on PS3, you can't play with people who are playing on 360 or on Wii U or on PC. It's all kind of a closed system, as it were. I mean, I would definitely like to see something like that, to be honest. But Bally, what do you think? Do you think that this could be a cool thing that could happen? in the future?
I think it might happen. I think it's very... With other companies linking together, I think Nintendo must feel a bit under pressure, like they have to do something to become a bit more, you know, trendy and kind of keep up with everyone, especially with Steam and Valve and the popularity of PC gaming through Steam.
Yeah.
As if Nintendo could link up, I'm sure they will.
And there was an interesting thing. I believe it was around the time before E3 of 2012, there were a lot of rumors going around because Nintendo hadn't showed their hand on the online infrastructure for Wii U yet. And so people were talking about whether they were courting a third party to help them make that. And ideas were being thrown around. Maybe it's EA with Origin. And the reason for that was because the year previous, I believe, EA were on stage at the Nintendo press conference talking about an unprecedented partnership with Nintendo and how EA are going to be bringing tons of games to the Wii U platform and all that stuff. And of course, that completely fizzled out and EA were a shit show on Wii U and decided to, you know, release a terrible Mass Effect 3 port, but we'll not talk about that. It's a matter of a different time. And they really didn't do much. And I guess some people speculated that the reason for that was because Nintendo declined EA the option of having Origin as the main basis for their online infrastructure, and so maybe because that deal fell through, EA were like, fuck you, and decided to not pay attention to the console. But people were also thinking that maybe they would work with Valve, you know, to create an infrastructure like Steam on the Nintendo system. And I think that would be amazing, especially because Nintendo don't have the first clue how to create an online infrastructure themselves. They're kind of getting there now, but certainly implementing a third party to come in and help them out with it would be amazing. So that's a thing that could have happened, but whether it'll happen now, I don't think so, to be perfectly honest. I think that maybe it's a bit far-fetched at this point, and Valve really has nothing to gain from helping Nintendo. They are perfectly fine making their billions upon billions of dollars themselves and not needing to move into the hardware business. I mean, you know, there's a lot of talk right now about the Steam boxes and how Valve are going to potentially enter the PC marketplace. And, you know, I know, Bali, that you're someone who is somewhat interested in PC games, but you would never go out and buy a PC yourself.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
What do you think about the prospect of the Steam box and that kind of stuff?
I am open to absolutely buying a Steam box, but I want it to be a box that other people buy and is being talked about and actually has a good controller, has...
Right,
the
that's something
I
that's
want. Yeah,
sure.
I mean, I'd be totally open to it, though. But I just hope that there's one that pulls away from the crowd and like becomes the obvious box for someone like me to pick up.
Sure. And I mean, the thing with Nintendo and Valve is that they have kind of very similar methods of game innovation in the way that they like to do very different things. You know, the whole idea of Portal and the Portal Gun is one of the most revolutionary things in gaming in the last decade, I think. It's just, it's a crazy concept, and it's the sort of thing that you can imagine would have come out of one of the Nintendo EAD studios. It's on that level of bonkers, and it works, and it's sublime, and I really think that they have a sort of kinship in that way, that they always like to push forward in terms of innovating. And to be honest, I think that both of them are on a bit of a back burner with that. Valve are making so much money through Steam that they aren't really focusing on releasing any of their own IP right now. And Nintendo are pulling back on the Risk thing as well. They're just releasing things that they think are going to be safe and sell. So both are in a little bit of a bad position in terms of their IP currently. But certainly, I mean, I couldn't imagine a Valve-Nintendo partnership. That would kind of blow my mind. And the funny thing is, I would say that if you're someone who owns a PC and a Nintendo platform, you're pretty much set, to be perfectly honest. Like, there are the exclusives on Sony and Microsoft that, you know, they're great and all, but it's not the be-all and end-all, in my opinion. And I think that you get the best of both worlds, both third-party and Nintendo stuff, if you go that route. And that's the route that I've generally been going down. So I know it's one that, you know, you would as well, Bally, if you had the option. So
yeah, absolutely. I like the idea of small, cheap game, indie games, like many of the ones you play on Steam.
Yeah,
that's definitely something I'm missing out on. And obviously, the Wii U shop is getting better, but it's still right. nowhere near the level of Steam, is it? So.
Certainly not. And I mean, I would like to see that be pushed more by Nintendo, especially, you know, Sony have done a great job of curating indies and being like, we are the platform for independent developers and come to us because we're doing all these great things. And they are, I'll admit, that Sony have done a fantastic job, but Nintendo actually have a very easy way for indie developers to get on their platform. You know, they're supporting the Unity engine on Wii U, and that's a thing that many indie developers use to create their games. They've created the Nintendo Web Framework, which is an HTML5-based platform, which a lot of indie devs use as well, and they are really making it as easy as possible for, you know, these indie developers to come and put their games on their platform. And that is why there are a lot of indie games coming in the latter half of this year, I believe. You know, a lot of them have already been on Steam, which is fine. You know, you can get them there. But, you know, there are console players who haven't had those experiences. So doing some more partnership stuff with Valve and having that relationship. And the fact that, I mean, in this Kotaku article that he linked to us, you know, Nintendo and Valve both seem to be open to the idea. I think that that's fantastic. I definitely think that's an interesting prospect. So, yeah, fantastic question. Thank you very much for sending that. And wow, we've run a lot of time out here. I think that
we have. I was going to say, just with that last question, what's your opinion on the Nintendo FPS?
You mean something that isn't so stand out as Steel Diver, something more traditional?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that a Nintendo first-person shooter, as he suggests, would be something similar to Team Fortress 2, where it's very cartoony, and it's not super serious, and, you know, I could even imagine, how about Mario Paintball, right? You know, it seems like that would be a sort of thing that Nintendo would do, you know, take an established IP, make it lighthearted, you know, don't include all the gore and blood and realistic stuff, but go more whimsical with it. Do you think that's a prospect, maybe, Bally, that could happen?
If I saw them go down the FPS route, I think they would change 3D Metroid in some way. I feel like they get around the blood and gore by making lasers shoot aliens, which
sure.
has for years now, you can relate lots of films and things to where you're shooting aliens and not people that
right.
make it less adult.
Visceral, yeah.
So I think that and that's the route to some extent they've already gone down with Metroid. I mean,
right.
you're shooting lasers at aliens plenty in the Prime
Definitely.
Trilogy.
And I mean, talking of Metroid Prime, like, Metroid Prime was one of the seminal influences for Portal. You know, Portal as a first-person, much more of a puzzle adventure game.
Yeah.
It's not a shooter at all. And that really, the groundwork was set with Metroid Prime. Metroid Prime was a first-person exploration puzzle, but also combat-based game. So, yeah, definitely. There's a lot of kind of lineage linking these two companies together. And, you know, they may seem extremely far apart. They're on two opposing sides of the industry. And yet, I think that them teaming up would be a fantastic thing. So, yeah, you've really exhausted us there. Excellent question, and thanks for sending that in. And we actually have quite a few questions in the inbox, which means that I don't think we'll get to perhaps all of them as we usually do, but do continue to send them in, and we will be, you know, cherry picking the best of the best. And and so I hope that encourages you guys to you know, up the ante and give us some great questions. So you can send your questions to the regular email address, which is Bally.
nyppquestions@gmail.com,
and we do await them as we do every week. So we will return after this very short break with a roundup of what happened in the latest Nintendo Direct, all about Super Smash Brothers. So don't go anywhere, we shall be right back. And we return once more for the final segment of this this episode, wherein we shall discuss the things that went on regarding the Super Smash Bros. Direct that happened a while ago. And there's lots of things. Lots of things. It was a pretty big Direct. Bally, before we talk about the Direct itself, how excited were you going into this? What were you expecting? I guess we talked a little bit about that, but were you hyped?
Yeah, I was really, really hyped, actually. And then I think just before it, you said, oh yeah, it's going to be 40 minutes long. And I was like, what? 40 right. minutes? Like... It's I knew that there would be a lot announced, and obviously there was a lot announced, and it was exciting.
Yeah,
and
yeah. It was great. So I guess we can just kick off and just kind of go in some sort of discussion. I'm not sure whether we're going to be super structured or not, but I think we'll kick off. Like, Sakurai kicked it off pretty technically. He started talking, and he was mentioning, like, right, I'm going to break down some technical things. You untechnical people, Bally, stop paying attention. And he was breaking down, like... The frame rate is going to be running on the 3DS version at a solid 60 for the characters, which is pretty fantastic considering that that's going to maintain even in 3D, which is great. I'm pretty sure the Link Between Worlds was running at 60 as well, and that maintained in 3D also, so that I can only imagine how great it's going to look. It really makes a big difference in terms of the visuals when it's running at a really solid frame rate. So That's good. At least we have that down, and I'm not sure how much that will be affected online, because, you know, we'll see how it shakes out eventually. But maybe we can hope for stuff like that. So that's great. And then I guess we'll move into, I think, like, one of the first things he was talking about was the release dates, right? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I think that was the very first announcement, actually.
It was the first major one for certain.
First major one, yeah.
And so, what we found out was that they are actually staggering the release of Smash. Now, when Iwata walked out on stage at E3 2012, 11, and said, yes, Mr. Sakurai is working on the next Super Smash Bros. Game, and it is going to be on 3DS and Wii U, I thought, well, that's it. They're both coming out same day. I'm going to get them both, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But no, that isn't the case. They are, you know, one is coming out in the summer, which is the 3DS version, and then there is one in the winter of 2014, which is somewhat interesting phrasing, to be sure, because apparently if you go very mathematically about it, winter 2014 comprises a time span of about 10 days. I'm certain that's not what Nintendo means when they say winter 2013. I think they mean the November-December time slot. But
why is winter in 2014 10 days?
Because apparently, according to the official timetable calendar, it's something to do with the official way the calendar works, and when winter officially starts on, like, the 26th of December or something like that, or I don't know. There's, like, the 20th of December. I don't know. Don't ask me. People were saying it. I heard it on a lot of podcasts, so I just thought I'd mention it, but I don't think that's what they mean. I think they mean the holiday time period, right? Would you agree with me on that?
I hope so.
Yeah, because otherwise it means that they can push it to 2015. But in general, Bally, what do you think about them staggering it? There have been a lot of opinions on this matter as whether it's going to benefit them or whether it's going to hurt them in the long run. Where do you stand?
I'm really happy because maybe it's difficult for us to speak about, because regardless of whenever they were going to both come out, we were going to get both no matter what.
Right.
So maybe that's one issue to address. But mainly, I was personally, even though I was going to get both, I was a bit worried that on launch day, I don't know what one to play. I don't know how much time to allocate to Wii U, how much time to play on 3DS. Am I just going to play both two brand new games exactly at the same time? Like, I like having one game to focus on and play through. And I think being able to play through and experience the 3DS version this summer is a far better idea, because it means I played the 3DS version right up until the Wii U one comes out, and then boom, straight onto Wii U. And I will have given a good amount of time to both games. And I think for people that were maybe humming and hawing about different versions, those people that would just want the Wii U version because, oh, it's the better, superior graphics, blah, 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 I bet a lot of those people who own a 3DS will still succumb to the temptation to pick up the 3DS version when it comes out. And I think as a result, Nintendo will sell more, hopefully.
Well, I hope that's the case. I mean, there have been arguments for the other opinion, which is the Wii U version is going to be hamstrung by the fact that it comes out on a different system first, and that a lot of the sales are going to disappear because the 3DS is a system which has much higher install base, and obviously the Wii U isn't doing so well, and people, you know, arguing that they need to get this system some momentum, and the fact that they are pushing it back further than the handheld version of the game is, you know, it does lead to somewhat worrisome troubles. You know, maybe it will shake out that way, but I certainly hope not. And I think that by releasing the 3DS version first, they really act as an appetizer for the main event, because let's be honest, the console version is the definitive one. This is the one we're waiting for. This is the one that we're going to spend the most time playing. It is the better version for all intents and purposes, right? So having that appetizer and having a pretty good chunk of time between the two of them, you know, a span of around 5-6 months, that's great. You know, it allows us to get some action of Smash Brothers, get into it, you know, get used to the control scheme even, because, you know, we are born and bred on GameCube and we use that controller mostly for Brawl and Melee. So getting used to the buttons layout, because it is the exact same on Wii U as it is on 3DS. The A, B, X, Y is, you know, it's identical. So that helps to a degree, and it just sets the stage. That's what I think anyway. I hope that it's going to work out that way. I definitely think in the long term, 3DS will probably end up outselling the Wii U version just because of the higher install base. But what it will do in general is push people who have the 3DS version to maybe go and get the Wii U one.
Yeah.
And I know that that's maybe not something that happens for most people, because most people don't think, you know, buy two versions of the same game. But when they're doing so many different things, it makes the proposal of getting the same game twice a lot easier to stomach, right? So yeah.
I was going to say that a big point that we've not talked about yet is that, and this was left out of the direct, and they told us that they weren't talking about this, but they will in the future, was how the Wii U and 3DS versions link up. And I think that is a huge element in people who are on the fence deciding whether to buy both versions or one version, which version. I think if Nintendo will pull the rabbit out of the hat on this one, I think. I think there's going to be something, and I think we spoke about this last time, there's going to be something that links the two that will make any Nintendo fan have to buy both versions. That you'll be like, that is an amazing feature, I have to experience that, I'm going to buy both versions.
Right, and they could even go so far as to be like, hey, you've unlocked all these characters in the 3DS version, you've had it for this amount of time, when you get to the Wii U version, you don't have to worry about unlocking them, because we'll sync the games together, and all the characters you've unlocked on the 3DS version will be on the Wii U straight from the beginning, and you'll be able to jump straight in, and not have to worry about getting the characters again. You know, something like that could be like a convenience, something to benefit the people who have gone out and bought the 3DS version and put a lot of time into it, and it's just a nice benefit, you know, it's just a nice bonus, and I think something along those lines is what they're going to be looking to do. I'm not sure how much more innovative they will go than that, but I don't know, Nintendo do weird stuff, we know this, so that is a thing that we can be thinking about for certain. So anyway, I think we should move on to talk about maybe the online modes, because that was a lot of what they focused the attention on. And it was really funny. I thought that Sakurai in this direct was a giant troll, and he continues to be the internet's best troll, and is just amazing at doing so. And so he's made two brand new game modes for online, one of which is called For Fun, one of which is called For Glory, and both play very differently. You know, the For Fun mode is your classic Smash Brothers experience, all items, all characters, all stages, all everything, just online against everyone. And then there's the For Glory mode, which is, I feel, a very subtle jab at the competitive Smash Brothers community. It's funny,
because they don't want to have fun, they just care about glory.
Exactly. No, I think it's really funny in general. I'm not sure how many of the competitive community will adopt it as a style of play, simply because they still, even though, you know, they're stripping away a lot of that stuff, they still have their own constraints and they want their own rule set. And a lot of the time, competitive players will play against each other and will know each other. So they won't be going online to have random matchups. They'll be finding the people they know who are good and be playing them and having their own personal setups, right? So I don't think that in terms of the really niche Smash competitive community, it's going to have a big impact. But I certainly think that, you know, people who like that style of play and are interested in that style of play maybe have a bash at it and have a go at it, because it's certainly, you know, catering to that audience some way or another. As trolly as it is and as funny as it is that he's acknowledging them, it's, I don't know, it's an interesting way to spin it.
I think
do you think you'll jump into For Glory mode?
Yeah, I think I'll play both modes for sure. I think I'll play For Fun more than For Glory, but you never know, I might get really into it. I could see myself trying to have a good winning streak in For Glory and getting really good at that version. But one thing that I want to agree with, actually, Johnny Metz from RFN, who made the point that labeling these two groups of players in this way is a little bit damaging, in the sense that there are plenty of people who will play the For Glory mode just for a bit of fun, in the same way that there'll be incredibly competitive players in the For Fun mode. So it's a bit of a shame that it's been divided so drastically, but I do quite like the labeling, to be honest, and I like that I can have a little go in one mode and then be like, okay, right, I've got my ass whipped by these guys online in For Glory. I'm gonna go into For Fun and use the weapons and whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't fully agree with that point, to be honest. I mean, I think if they hadn't implemented this system and had simply had a single online mode, the problem would have been so much worse, because you will never find people who are looking for the same style of game as you. At least with this in mind, it makes it so that you are more likely to come up with players of your skill level if you're choosing an individual mode. So I think that it actually does help. And I think that you will find that crossover and you will find issues sometimes, but it certainly helps alleviate the problem rather than exacerbate it. So that's what I think, honestly. But
we should also maybe segue into the main feature of the stages in For Glory mode.
Definitely.
Sakurai talked about, and that is that lots of stages are going to have a final destination mode or
version,
exactly.
So what you get essentially is a more varied landscape in the background, some nicer things to look at without being
music,
right, without being hamstrung by the fact that you are simply playing on, you know, a single stage all the time and not having any variety there. So it gives you all the charm of the Nintendo universe without necessarily having the interfering elements that protrude from those stages. So
yeah, so definitely, I think that was good. A really nice addition.
It's real smart, and it shows a lot of tact on Sakurai's end in the fact that he's thinking about these things and is actually paying attention to the competitive community. And, you know, despite the fact he's being a massive troll, he is actually contributing something interesting, and I do appreciate that for certain. So,
I mean, those competitive players must get a little bit sick of the same stage again and again. So
definitely,
it's really nice just to give them something, you know.
Yeah, it's just a change of scenery, you know. It's something to freshen things up a bit. So that's great. And I guess this ties into you know, talking about being competitive, is their ranking system, which is called Global Smash Power. I'm not super familiar with how this works, Bally. Do you have any better clue than I do?
The bit I remember is that it basically gives you a number, and your number is how many people in the world are below you.
Right.
I seem to remember that's what he said.
Okay.
So I think it's a bit of bullshit, really. I know my rank must be really, really, really low, but I don't care as what number it is. I still want to know what it is, and
sure,
why can't they just do a world ranking system like every other sport in the world, you know?
But you know, this is Nintendo, they want to make it more family friendly.
I'm not buying that. I don't know, it's it's really weird. Like, just give us regular ranking, in my opinion.
Sure. I mean, I don't care much about ranking at all, to be honest, so it's not something I'm going to give too much of a shit about, but, you know, at least it's there, right? At least there's something.
I think we'll get into it. I think you'd be surprised. I think...
Really? You think I'm going to get a bit competitive about it? I guess maybe between you and I to see who is higher, then yeah, definitely.
Oh,
definitely,
yeah,
that'll be a thing.
I think... Everyone, at some stage during their experience with these games, are going to have a go, to be honest.
Fair enough. That's good enough. So we have a lot of other things to talk about. Is anything in specific you want to pull out, Bally?
One thing I'm less excited about than the internet seems to be is the Smash Run mode for the 3DS.
Right.
So this is a multiplayer mode where... For the first, I think it's 5 minutes, you're all running around this world, picking...
What I saw, there was a screenshot of, like, an airship with multiple rooms inside. It gave me the vibe of, do you remember the part in Melee when you're going through adventure mode? You got to the Zelda section, and you were just running through this maze where you were fighting enemies at certain points. It reminded me of that, and it also gave me a kind of... Subspace Emissary vibe to it.
Yeah, I mean, neither of those modes in Melee and Brawl, I guess we were young and a bit naive at the time with Melee, and we probably kind of liked it, but
yeah,
looking back on it, both those modes are a bit dry and boring, in my opinion, personally.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this mode, it's just... I don't know,
But I mean, the main purpose behind going through those stages isn't to clear the stages, it's to gain power-up so that afterwards you have a match with other players using those. Do you think that that's a bit too much of a preamble and that you would much rather have just a straight-up game as opposed to going through all this nonsense, get all this stuff, and then have a game and have it be much more unbalanced, honestly?
I really don't know the answer to that, and maybe I shouldn't judge before even trying it.
Definitely.
And Game Explain, actually, the YouTube channel Game Explain, they did a video on Kirby's Air Ride where the mode is directly basically taken from. It was one of Sakurai's former games, absolutely. And in that mode, you're flying around, it's broadly speaking a racing game, you're flying around getting power-ups, and then halfway through, it tells you which power-up you should get more of, because after the time's up, the challenge afterwards is slightly different every time. So sometimes the challenge afterwards is a straight race, sometimes it's a battle, sometimes it's who can glide the longest on this jump. So based on the challenge afterwards, it makes you want to collect different attributes. So they didn't really make that clear in the direct, but that would be cool if maybe... rather than just a fight afterwards every time, it was maybe a race, or who can hit the sandbag the furthest based on how much power they get, and incorporate that somehow. And it'd be nice if it told you, like, halfway through the stage, like, you'll want extra speed because, at the end of this 5 minutes, it's going to be a race, and then it's just literally a sprint race through a course. That'd be quite cool.
That sounds interesting. Yeah, it definitely would shake things up a bit more. And I guess talking about this mode calls into the question the idea of the single-player mode, because it, you know, reminds me so much of that, and I'm sure same with you. So what do you think about the prospects of having a single-player mode on 3DS? Do you think that there isn't going to be one, and that that's something that they will save for the Wii U and perhaps leverage on that version as being a selling point? Or will they shove something in here, just a token, on the side?
It's hard to say. I think there will be plenty of single player content on the 3DS version. I think there'll be plenty of content on both. Maybe the single player modes will even link somehow, like we were suggesting, but it's hard to say. And I think Smash and single player, it's never been like, it's always been a tough ride, and it'd
definitely
be really nice if they did something that you could sit down, play the single player, complete it, and think, wow, that was great. Like that, this game could stand alone single player, and I don't think they've done that yet, but you never know.
I mean, it's a problem that's very analogous to Mario Kart. You know, the single player is very weak in that game generally, and both of these games excel amazingly when it comes to the multiplayer space, but in single player they are somewhat lacking. So, you know, I definitely think that there isn't going to be much single-player content in the 3DS version. I feel that that's going to be a feature that they'll leverage on Wii U and be like, hey, this is where this is at, and now, you know, now that you've had some time with the 3DS, now come to the Wii U, get the full experience, and that's how it'll roll. But I guess we'll have to see, and time will tell, I guess. And I'm pretty sure, you know, that Smash Run thing is a 3DS exclusive thing, right? They did say that.
Yes, so, I do believe that's what they said.
So maybe it will work that that's an exclusive, and then there'll be something else on Wii U. I'm sure there will be. So yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I guess related to that is the custom movesets, the idea of you'll be able to, not in online modes, but in local play and with friends online, actually, not in the kind of general online mode, but with friends and in friend local play, you can attribute custom movesets to characters and give them moves that they usually wouldn't have. Now, Bally, I know that you are not a proponent for anything custom in any game ever, so I'm guessing your opinion on this is that it can go and die in a fire.
To some extent. I should say I went into the map-making mode in Advance Wars this week.
Oh, you did? What do you think about it?
It's a great mode, but I'm not into it at all.
Nothing for you, right? Yeah.
I mean, at some point, I should definitely try making a map. But
Bali's opinion is leave it to the developers; they know best.
Yeah, and I think many will hopefully share that opinion. But I don't. Just give Mario one type of fireball. Why do we need to? Why does he need to be able to do like a little quick one or a massive slow one? Like just the regular one, you know.
I mean, yeah, I'm gonna mess around with it, you know me. I like pissing around with these stages and these custom moves. And
it feels like it would just be wasted time. Like when we meet up and have a gaming session, there's only so much time, and we're gonna spend it making Mario's fireballs different sizes and. Yeah, Metroid. Yeah. Oh my god, I called Samus Metroid. And making Samus's laser do something different. Yeah. It's just ridiculous. I don't know. I'm not
sure.
I don't even get the appeal of it, but yeah, that's just me.
I mean, talking of running out of time, we kind of are here, so I guess we should jump to the real major announcements.
Oh boy.
So first of all, let's talk about the splitting of characters. So, you know, they decided to get rid of the transformations in battle, so no longer will Zelda be able to become Sheik or Zero Suit Samus be able to come out of the shell after the Smash attack has happened. They're now separate characters. Do you think that's a good decision, Bally, or did you like it before with the changing mid-battle?
I like the decision, but I understand the criticism that it takes a bit away from the craziness of Smash Brothers. Like,
sure.
It prides itself on being crazy and innovative and weird.
Ridiculous.
And
yeah,
ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the ridiculous thing about characters like Zelda, Pokemon Trainer, were that they could transform and become a completely different model that controlled completely differently and had its own moves, its own style. And to some degree, it's a shame that that's dropped. But at the same time, I was never... I did play quite a bit as Pokemon Trainer.
Sure.
And I liked the way that it encouraged you to switch as the powers of them decreased, I think, when you used them too much. But yeah, it's not a big loss, to be honest, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, even when I was playing as, say, Zero Suit Samus, I would never go into a match as Samus and hope, like, oh, I hope I get a Smash Ball. So, you know, I would hold down the L and R buttons prior to the match starting and shed my suit and, you know, start off as Zero Suit.
I
think that it's appreciated, definitely.
I've never been much of a Samus or Zero Suit Samus player, but if I were into one of those characters, it would really annoy me that I had to have a Smash Ball just to get from one character to the other. I think, like, that was a bit weird, and just having a down B transformation is a better option, but out of the characters that they've split and chopped and changed, I'm glad that they went with Charizard. I think he was easily my favorite out of the three
totally.
Pokemon trainer Pokemon. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it is a bit sad that characters like Ivysaur and Squirtle are dropped. Just
sure,
but you know they
don't have that much of
a cachet.
Yeah, and that's ironic. However, because I guess we'll move into the major announcement, because there was a brand new character announced, like completely new, and it was not what anyone was expecting. Sakurai, once again, Master Troll, decided to make us all think that Mewtwo was returning to the fray, but that wasn't the case. It is, in fact, Greninja, a Pokemon that, you know, we're very familiar with, but I think a lot of people won't be, especially just general Nintendo fans who don't necessarily play Pokemon all that much. It's a bit of an obscure one, don't you think?
Yeah, it was really weird, and the trailer for him was obviously set up to make it look like he was Mewtwo.
Totally.
And then there's one point where you realise it's water, and you think,
yeah,
water.
What?
Like what? And then it's a great trailer. It's a really, really cool trailer.
And the thing that lends credence to the Mewtwo argument is, of course, the idea of Mega Evolutions, because Lucario is getting the Mega Evolution in this game, and so is Charizard. And so Mewtwo was one of the Pokemon that was given a Mega Evolution treatment in X and Y. And so, you know, he's really building it. He's really building that idea. And then just all of a sudden cuts and it's Greninja, and it's nuts. That's crazy. I'm pretty shocked by it, to be honest. It does make a certain degree of sense, because he's an X and Y Pokemon, and I'm sure they wanted to do that. In Brawl they had a Diamond Pearl Pokemon, which was Lucario, but Lucario was much more of, you know, the trademark Pokemon for that generation, I feel. Like, he was in
it had a big role in the anime, didn't it?
Yeah, he was in the movie. He was featured in the movie, and he was, like, one of the most prominently featured Pokemon before Diamond Pearl was released. It made sense that he was being used. And I guess there wasn't really a mascot of X and Y to any degree, so it didn't really matter, but I'm really thrilled that Greninja's in there, because he's really interesting and he has a very cool move pool, and I'm certainly looking forward to using him. What's your opinion on him so far from what you've seen, Bally?
He looks cool. I'm not particularly excited about him, but I just think his inclusion completely throws every kind of theory as to how many Pokemon are going to be in the roster, how big the roster is going to be in general, the number of characters that have been in every game so far that haven't even been announced yet, the idea that Mewtwo must be being dropped now, even though it's got two awesome Mega Evolutions, like it.
Yeah.
Or maybe Mewtwo's in it. Maybe Mewtwo's going to be in it. Maybe both his forms are going to be in it. Maybe Jigglypuff on top of that. Maybe even more on top of that. Like, there's the potential that the biggest surprise of this game that hasn't been announced yet is that the roster is just going to keep going. And splitting up characters like Zelda into Sheik and Zelda is just making that roster even bigger.
Right, like, exactly.
It's crazy.
And I mean, here's the thing. The character roster is the same across both versions. They've confirmed that much, which means that when the 3DS version comes out, that's all the characters. So they actually don't have a huge amount of time to finish announcing characters here. They have E3, where I'm sure they'll do some big ones, but, you know, after that, you know... very little time. The gap is closing, so we'll see how it shakes out. But yeah, very well, we could end up with a 70 character rostered game, which would be insane, and I would love it. So we'll see how that happens. But anyway, we have run short on time here. Good discussion though, some really interesting stuff to look forward to, and Smash is something that will dominate the conversations in the months to come, so we will be sure to be talking about it. But that is going to close out our show, so thank you very much for listening. Before we go, we're going to plug ourselves. So, Bally, why don't you do that right about now?
You can follow me on Twitter at Ballyman91. That's BallyMan91. That's also my name on Miiverse, if you want to see what I've been posting on there.
Yes, indeed. And you can follow me on Twitter at LordNBZ and on Miiverse of the same name. We've had some good iTunes reviews come out recently, and we'd like to give a bit of a shout-out to people who have done that for us. So, Bali, what would you do?
Yeah, massive shout-outs to Mustached Lucario and Johnny X, both of them giving us very favourable reviews. So it's very much appreciated. And, yeah, just honestly, give us some more. That would be amazing if by next episode we had a few more reviews. I mean, they help so much for the show. Spread the word. Yeah, more reviews. Keep them coming, guys. That'd be great.
Definitely, I can back up that point, and we will give you shout-outs if you give us reviews. So if you want to hear your name read out on the show, reviewing us on iTunes, it's a great way to do that. Great way indeed. So so thank you for your continued support of the show here. I guess that's going to be us. So we shall see you in a couple of weeks. Before we go, I should probably plug the email address again. So Bali, do you want to relate that to everyone?
Oh yeah, that one. Yeah, there we go. NYPPquestions@gmail.com. Keep the emails flowing.
Yeah, definitely do that. We do have quite a few, but please keep sending them in. We enjoy reading them, and we do read every single one, no matter whether they get onto the show or not. So it's valuable, and it helps us grow. So, yes, we're going to close out. Thank you again, and we will be back with you in a couple of weeks' time. But until then, you know, have fun gaming, and enjoy all your playing, and we will rejoin you very shortly. Goodbye.
See you soon.
Horribly, holy shit, I'm ruining my own
My edit. Segment was so slow, my brain just isn't...
Yeah, I don't know, oh god, for some reason we're both just dying today. Alright, okay, what were you asking?
I can't
you
even remember.
No, you... Alright, yeah, anything you want to add here, Bali, at all? Or should we just move on to our next segment?
I think we should move on.
Okay.
Why are we so shit today? I was going to butt in and say, well, what about that? And you've started now the Leighton Phoenix. But you were like waffling so much. You were talking so fast that I just couldn't butt in at all. I was like, okay. And then when it finally comes back to me, I have nothing to say.
Oh, God. Oh, God. All right.